Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Bridget Bergen, filling in for Brian Lehrer today. How much have you thought about how you will afford to grow old? We spend a lot of time thinking about how to care for our health in the present, but as we age, more and more of us are often faced with daunting decisions about how to care for ourselves and our loved ones with no real support system in place. Sure, there's Medicare and Medicaid, two federal programs that provide some support. But with the rising price of healthcare, nursing homes, and assisted living facilities, there are still huge gaps that can lead to truly startling outcomes. In fact, a new report finds that Americans who needed to live in long-term care facilities were more likely to die broke. That's just one of the findings in a series from the New York Times and KFF Health News, formerly known as the Kaiser Family Foundation. It's called Dying Broke, and it examines the patchwork of solutions Americans are forced to rely on as they age or while caring for aging loved ones. Joining me now to unpack some of the findings in this report is Reed Abelson, the New York Times healthcare reporter, along with her reporting partner, Jordan Rao of KFF Health News. She interviewed dozens of families about their experiences with long-term care in this country. Reed, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, are you taking care of an aging loved one? What has the experience been like for you? What kinds of financial decisions did you have to make? Did you have to dip into your retirement savings earlier than expected to pay for the costs of caring for a loved one in a long-term care facility? Or did you have to make changes to your personal or professional life to care for a loved one at home? Call us at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-9692-WNYC. You can also text or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Reed, as a healthcare reporter, you have covered these issues for a long time. I know you've looked at the rising cost of healthcare writ large, but what prompted you to report on this specific issue, the cost and really the burden of long-term care in this country?
I think because it's a universal issue. What we found in talking to people is that nearly everyone we interviewed, including experts, had a personal story about the struggles they had either to afford or to handle long-term care for a loved one. And yet it's an issue that really isn't particularly on the radar of Congress. Mm-hmm. It isn't something where we can point to an obvious solution. And so one of the compelling reasons to do the series was to delve deeply into this and try and get a discussion going among people.
Now, some of this issue is a double-edged sword. You know, you've got medical advances that are helping people live longer, but that also means a growing population of people 65 and older who may need this long-term care. How is this population expected to grow in the near future?
So, the estimates are really sort of stunning. By 2050, the population of Americans 65 and older is projected to increase by more than 10% to 86 million,
wow,
according to census estimates. And the number of people 85 and older will nearly triple to 19 million. And it's obviously, as people get older and older, they often need care.
And so here, you're talking about this problem on a massive scale, a huge population, and yet you describe our current long-term care system as a patchwork. What are the elements of it?
So actually, I think a patchwork is almost kind. You know, we really don't have much of a system. There is, you know, a private market for long-term care insurance, but really many, you know, it's a small minority of people who take advantage of that. And so the cost, you know, you a lot of the costs have to be borne personally, whether that's home care or assisted living. You do have government programs, as you mentioned, Medicare and Medicaid, but they really are limited. Medicare really doesn't cover long-term care, and Medicaid is for the poor. So people really can't have, you know, a lot of assets and income. And we also saw it play out with spouses who had to sacrifice because one of the partners was in a nursing home paid by Medicaid.
Mm. Can you talk a little bit more about what is driving some of the increased costs, either at these facilities and for this care writ large?
I think some of it is that this is a very dominated by private companies, you know, including hedge funds and private equity. And, you know, those companies are in the business of making money. So some of the cost increases are that. It's also, though, the labor issues. I don't think there's any question that the pandemic revealed, you know, a real shortage of good paying jobs, and the fact that there's a shortage of people willing to do these jobs means that it's just very tough. And again, the labor costs have also contributed to rising expenses. So it's incredibly expensive. I mean, and when we polled people, when KFF polled people, it's clear that people know they can't afford a nursing home that costs more than $100,000 a year. Even assisted living, you know, which can run, you know, $60,000 for many and more in urban areas, you know, is really out of reach for people once you do multiple years.
Mm. Your story includes, you know, some very difficult decisions families across the country are making to care for their loved ones. You found that it was often partners and spouses, and then in families where there was children, daughters who were often responsible for the caretaking. In your interviews, how are women playing an outsized role in some of this caretaking?
There's no question that daughters are really, both the data suggests that, but our interviews suggest that daughters are taking a huge role. I talked to one woman who left, you know, a promising career to, you know, come back home to care for her mother full time. We talked with Jordan Rao, my colleague at KFF Health News, talked to a woman who had moved back into her childhood home for a while to take care of, you know, a parent. I mean, you know, daughters are often sacrificing their own careers to take care of loved ones, and it's really tough. I mean, you see how resilient people are. They try and find a way to care for people, but at the same time, you know, it's clear that there's just huge sacrifice, both financially and emotionally.
I want to bring some of our listeners into this conversation. Let's go to Margaret in Toms River, New Jersey. Margaret, thanks for calling WNYC.
Hi. I wanted to tell you about my father and about myself, because I'm now 67. My dad lived to be 93. He passed away 2 years ago. I had just retired from work, and he said, I can't live by myself anymore. So I came up from Virginia. I had worked for the federal government for 30-some-odd years, and I sold my townhouse and my daughter, who had just graduated from high school, and I moved up to Toms River to take care of my dad. And he was, you know, it wasn't too bad for the first 2 years that we were here. And then the last 6 months, he couldn't walk around anymore. Every time I left the room, he would fall. I had hospice care in, you know, but they were only there a couple days a week for like 2 hours at a shot, barely enough time to go to the grocery store. Towards the end, I had to hire an overnight nurse because he was getting up in the middle of the night and wandering around, and he kept falling, and I had to keep taking him to the emergency room every time he fell because he cut his head open. This was during COVID. Mm. I am 67 now. When I was 50, I did purchase long-term care insurance, and it stayed at the same rate for a long time, but it has really gone up in the last year. Mm-hmm. And I don't want my daughter, who's you know, only 23 at this point to have to worry about me when I get to that point. I want to stay at home. I don't want to be shipped off somewhere. That was the promise I made to my dad. So that's why, you know, he was at home when he passed away. And my mother had been too. But it's really hard because, you know, you think about, you know, how much money you've saved up and how quickly it's going. And are you going to have enough to, you know, support yourself in your old age? And it's very scary. And I heard you talking about, you know, it's the girls in the family who wind up. It was just me and my brother. He's passed away. So it was me who wound up taking care of my dad. So it's hard. It's a real tug.
Margaret, I thank you for your call and your story. And, you know, it sounds like you have taken on a lot for your family. Reactions to that call, it certainly was reminiscent of the stories I read in your piece.
It was, yes. I mean, I think, and I hope people realize that they're not alone in their experiences. I mean, so many people are really sort of struggling, but they don't talk about it with other people. And I think these experiences are very common, where a daughter, you know, and sometimes a son and sometimes a son-in-law, you know, really put nearly everything on hold to care for someone. Because what's also very clear is that people really don't want to go into a facility unless they have to. But it's a very time-consuming and emotionally draining and often financially draining situation to try and care for someone 24/7, especially as their needs increase at the end of their life.
If you're just joining us, I'm Bridget Bergen from the WNYC Newsroom. I'm filling in for Brian today, and my guest is New York Times healthcare reporter Reed Abelson, and we're talking about her new series that looks at the costs of long-term care in this country, and we're taking your calls about your own experience, whether it's caring for a loved one or thinking about how you're going to take care of yourself as you age. The number's 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also tweet or text or tweet. Reed, the name of your series is called Dying Broke, and that is directly connected to one of the data points in the report related to people who need to live in assisted living facilities. What are some of the drivers that lead people to needing this care, and why has it become just so expensive?
One of the things that I think happens is, you know, we found a lot of families who are dealing with individuals with dementia, some of whom were really not safe. And yet, you know, the cost of a facility could be astronomical. So some people did, in fact, you know, care for people at home, but others felt really they had no choice. And on some level, the real safety net is only for people who have basically, you know, spent down or had no, you know, assets. And so that's the focus in terms of dying broke. I mean, the data is pretty clear that, you know, a lot of folks, even people who are, you know, middle class, who need long-term care for, you know, a long period, 5 years or more, will eventually enroll in Medicaid, which, you know, is actually right now the largest single source of funding for long-term care. And there's even a sort of stunning statistic from an analysis by the Urban Institute. Almost half of upper middle class couples with lifetime earnings of more than $4.75 million will also end up on Medicaid. Mm. And it's just because it's just round the clock care is very, very expensive. And, you know, when you need it for long periods of time, you just go through your money.
I want to bring Laura in Brooklyn into this conversation. I think her experience seems to echo some of what you're just describing, Reed. Laura, thanks for calling WNYC.
Hello. Yes, that's exactly what we're going through. My mother makes a very sort of healthy retirement amount, about $7,500 a month, and that is not enough to pay for care. Mm-hmm. And we faced a health crisis in mid-May, and we have been trying to figure out a place for her to live since then. Right now she's on the couch at her sister's rather than in a bed in a safe environment, clean environment. She's in a safe environment for sure. She can't live in her home because the stairs are too much. She can't live in my home because the stairs, my brother's stairs. So we are facing the prospect of spending everything down so that she can be eligible for Medicaid.
Laura, thank you so much for sharing your story, and good luck with what will be some, I think, difficult decisions going ahead. Reed, you found that in many instances that was part of what people had to do, that in order to qualify for Medicaid coverage, people needed to reduce their assets. Is that correct?
Yes, that's very much correct. And I think, you know, what's very tough is sometimes you have a couple and the question then becomes, well, do we spend everything down? But then what happens to the surviving spouse or partner? And that's a, you know, truly difficult decision. I mean, we came across some families where, you know, the decision was to keep someone at home, even though at times that they were at risk. And we found in other cases, the decision was, yes, we'll spend down and, you know, hope for the best. If the healthier spouse survives.
In your reporting, Reed, you note that the U.S., compared to other wealthy countries around the world, really lags when it comes to national response and investment in long-term care. But just for our perspective, how far behind are we? How much does the U.S. not invest in these needs?
Well, it's interesting. I think we truly don't invest. You know, we're behind a lot of other, you know, European countries. And what's frustrating, obviously, is that there have been a series of attempts, but we've never had the sort of political will and maybe even the cultural will to tackle this.
And, you know, that's very much why we're having this conversation, because obviously if we had better federal policies in place, we wouldn't be worried about the patchwork that doesn't seem to be holding together. But some policies have been proposed. You know, what are some of the measures that Congress has considered, and what kind of political opposition have they faced?
Well, I think there is an argument, many Republicans argue this, that this is something where people really have a responsibility to save, or to take other planning steps, like, you know, trying to find a long-term care insurance policy. But, you know, Congress has tried to address this. President Biden tried to, you know, increase some funding so that caregivers were paid more, but that funding was dropped in the final legislation. The difficulty is, you know, that this costs money. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so far there just really hasn't been an appetite to fund this kind of care.
I want to go to Fred in Manhattan. Fred, thanks for calling WNYC.
Thank you for taking my call. I am a 67-year-old single son of someone who's about to turn 101. I took care of her sister, her brother, my father. I'm very good at it, and I get them to very old ages in pretty good shape. Mm. But it has entirely ruined my career and my earning potential. And a very specific recommendation that I would make, among many, is that Social Security benefits be provided, or the credits be made for people who basically have given up their own work in order to care for others. If I were a paid caregiver, I would get Social Security benefits. As someone who cannot be paid because I'm a relative, I had to give up everything. And I do it out of love, and I am proud that I've gotten my relatives to such good ages and such good shape. But there's no awareness of the next generation. When COVID came, we avoided COVID, but I had to basically lock down with my parent for 4 years. And she's still alive, and she's still managing, but cannot manage on her own even for 5 minutes. So it requires constant presence.
Fred, thank you so much for your call, and thank you for everything that you're doing for your family. They are very lucky to have you. Reed, what I think Fred is suggesting there in terms of a credit sounds similar to what you said President Biden had attempted to include in the Build Back Better, but it seems to be very hard to get the political will to support those kinds of policies.
Yes, I mean, I think it is possible that there could be specific changes to things like Social Security or you know, trying to do tax credits. And I know under Medicaid, some Medicaid programs, family members who are caregivers can get paid. But it's very difficult, and we don't take a sort of step back and think broadly about how to make lives better for people. And I do want to echo that one of the, you know, true findings was that even when children, you know, managed to get their parents through, they were convinced, and probably appropriately so, that their own retirement years and, you know, older years would be really, really much more challenging, that they had either spent a lot of money, that they didn't have a pension, that there were a lot of factors that were going to make it even more difficult for them.
Mm. Some of the other interesting, there's so much that is in this series that we could talk for a very long time. But I wanted to, you know, spend a little bit of time seeing if we can offer some news or information people can use. One of the findings that I was struck by was that fewer than half of American adults mm-hmm. have seriously discussed long-term plans with a loved one. From your reporting, from everyone you spoke to, what kind of conversations do you think people should be having, and when should they be having them?
I think they should be having them, you know, early on, before there's a crisis. And it's absolutely true that we spoke to a lot of families who were in a crisis mode with having never really talked to their parents about, you know, what their financial situation was, and even more importantly, what their wishes were. And so I think that that's a conversation, you know, definitely worth having. I mean, thinking about, are there steps that one can take now to make it easier later? And, you know, what can they do? You know, how can they think about this? Mm. So I agree with you. That was stunning to me that more people hadn't had that discussion.
We have a lot of callers on the line with experiences and suggestions. I want to go to Judith in the Bronx. Judith, thanks for calling WNYC.
Thank you for having me on. I am actually an intake nurse with a managed long-term care plan. I've been doing home care for 9 years. And I just wanted to direct people to say that there's a program called Consumer Directed Personal Assistance Services, or CDPAS, where if your family member has Medicaid, you can actually be paid to take care of them. So, you know, I think it's starting at least $20 an hour, but your family member can pick you or a friend or whomever to be their home attendant. So that's an option. And as she was saying, I do want to echo, it is important to set all this up early because, yeah, it's very challenging. I see a whole slew of things. I see people who have to, you know, quit their jobs and suddenly, you know, they have a hard time paying the rent, et cetera. But at least this is an option where your family member can care for you in your home for as long as that's feasible. So that's my 2 cents.
Judith, thanks so much for your call. Thanks for your work, too. I want to go to Kyle in Williamsburg. Kyle has a different perspective. We've heard from some older listeners who are taking care of loved ones. Kyle, what's your experience, and how is this conversation resonating with you?
Well, I watched my mother, who's an only child, take care of her parents, and they were both divorced, so it's not like one parent was around to help the other. And the last one has recently passed, but I'm an only child. I'm queer, whatever. I may never have a partner. I might just be alone. I've gone to college. I have a master's degree. I can't seem to make a career stick. I have no savings. I have nothing. What recourse is there for me? If I just keep falling backwards through life, and I just can't make things work.
Kyle, I appreciate your openness with that question. And Reed, that Kyle is echoing that finding that was also in the report, that a majority of respondents, in this case, 50 or older, said that they were worried about paying for care and hadn't done research on what kinds of options. So for someone who is trying to navigate this space, are there suggestions for how someone might begin, particularly someone who may not have the ability to rely on family as someone as a caretaker?
So I would suggest going to sort of state and local government agencies and starting there to try and find out what, resources might be available. I also, do want to emphasize that, as problematic as it is, Medicaid is and does serve as a real safety net. So people, do have options. But I think the best thing to do is, as you point out, to try and inform yourself as much as possible about what steps you might be able to take and what programs there might be available.
Kyle, thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Nancy in Queens. Nancy, thanks for calling WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I was just wondering, first of all, when you talk about spending down, what does that mean? And also, if I am going to try to purchase long-term care for myself, since I don't have really any other options, should I need it, what is recommended? How much? For how long? Those are my questions. Thank you.
Nancy, thanks for your call. Reed,
it's a difficult, I'm sorry, it's a difficult question because it so depends on the specifics. I know that a lot of people, consult with elder care lawyers and financial advisors to get good advice. Medicaid is a very complicated system. A lot of the rules vary state by state. But basically, either through planning or other means, you have to have, very little in assets and very little in income to qualify. I mean, one of the points of the story is that, many people end up making too much to qualify for Medicaid. And then the other, in terms of long-term care insurance, again, I would say that, you obviously want a stable insurer. But, the specifics, your best bet would be to go to a financial planner or, lawyer who has both a lot of experience and is trusted in these areas.
Reed, a listener texted us an issue I think you covered in your reporting. The listener writes, "Hey there, can our current guest touch upon the look back issues? When parents gift their property to children to make themselves broke to get health care coverage, there's some sort of time that needs to pass after that gift happens. Can you explain that?"
Yes. I mean, I can't in huge detail, but I think generally it can be something like 5 years. So unfortunately, often again, what happens is that a crisis occurs and people realize it's too late to try and protect assets. So again, I think the sooner you can have those conversations and the sooner you can consult with, legal and financial advisors, the better off you are.
Well, we will leave it there for now. Reed Abelson reports on healthcare for the New York Times. She and her reporting partner, Jordan Rao of KFF Health News, wrote the series Dying Broke. on the cost of long-term care in this country. Reed, thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you.